Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, one thing that people don't seem to grasp, at least, you know, the, well... Any of you that are going to, you know, want to get rid of Mike Tomlin, be careful what you wish for. Or the whole, well, he's never had a losing season. Or the whole, you know, continuity's been the steward's best friend. You know, the Eagles are a team that blow all of those things completely out of the water. You understand that, right? And it was funny watching, I made this point on social media, it was funny watching some of the Mike Tomlin apologists try to spin this in a different way. I don't know if Mike Tomlin should be fired or not. Listen, I don't think he should. I think he should get another year. I get it. But the idea that he somehow should get a lifetime contract because he won a Super Bowl, what was it? It's been 15 years now, right? 2008. 15 years ago. Whatever it is. I think 14 seasons, but 15 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right, Joel? About that? 2008 is when he won the Super Bowl, right?
So it sounded about right.
14 years, 15. I think it's 14 seasons, 15 years maybe. Something like that. My point is, okay, that's great. Wow, but you're just discounting, you know, what has he done since then? Okay. What has he done since then? Let's take a look at what he's done since the Super Bowl. That would have been 2008. He won the Super Bowl, correct? I'm right on this. I know I am. So I think it's 14. I think it's 14 seasons, 15 years. But let's go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 seasons. It's 15 years. Of those 14 seasons, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's made the playoffs 8 times. He's missed the playoffs 6 times. Okay? Never had a losing season. But he's, let's see, 22 and 10. Let me do the math real quick. You know, his winning percentage is slightly, it's about 615 as opposed to 636 because the first 2 years he was really good. But no matter what, okay? But here's the other thing. He's 5-8 in the playoffs in the last 14 years. 14 seasons, 8 times he's made it, 6 he's missed. He's only won 5 playoff games in 14 seasons. He's gotten to 1 AFC title game. I'm sorry, he's gotten to 1 Super Bowl and 2 AFC title games. You know what that sounds like to me? Marty Schottenheimer. I mean, and that's no disrespect, but the bottom line is guys like Marty Schottenheimer get fired all the time. So the idea that you couldn't fire, well, but let's take it one step further. The idea that you couldn't fire him, you know, because, you know, he'll be hired again. Who knows, you know, he would be hired again, and then who knows that you, well, if you really, really, really believe in your ability to hire and fire coaches. If you really believe in your ability to do that, you're not worried about not being able to hire a good coach. And I would be willing to bet that the Steelers, who've had 3 coaches since 1969, feel like they probably have a pretty good formula for hiring a good coach. But let's look at the Eagles. The Eagles can't make the claim in the last 6 years that they did not have a losing season in the last 6 years. They cannot make that claim. They had, in 6 years ago, six seasons ago, they won the Super Bowl. Right? With Nick Foles as their quarterback. The next 2 years, they were in the playoffs. In fact, the next year they actually won a playoff game. So they lost in the divisional round and in the playoff, and the next year they lost in the wild card round. Right? So let's review. Doug Peterson, in his second year, won the Super Bowl. Who does that sound like? Who does that sound like? Mike Tomlin. Who does that sound like, right? In his second year, he won the Super Bowl, Peterson. And you know what? He didn't inherit a team or take over a team that had just won a Super Bowl 2 years before he got there either. So, Mike Tomlin. Well, so anyway, Doug Peterson wins a Super Bowl in year two. Year three, he loses in the divisional round of the playoffs. Year three, loses in the wild card round. Year four, they go 4-11-1. He's arguing with not seeing eye to eye with Jalen Hurts. They fire him. The guy just won a Super Bowl 2 years, 3 years, you know, in his three seasons before that. And the two seasons before that, and the two seasons in between, he made the playoffs. And they fired him. And they hired Sirianni. And in year one, Sirianni, they went 9-8, as we just established, and went to the playoffs. And now they're back in the Super Bowl. With a different quarterback, too, by the way, than they went to the Super Bowl with the last time. Think about it. Again, I'm not saying you fire Mike Tomlin. That's not what I'm saying. I don't know what's right. I do know there's got to be an expiration date if he doesn't start winning playoff games. And I think all of the people that call us dumb, provincial, they act like we're hacks around here because, well, you know, you don't know what you have. They think they're being ridiculous. They think they're being, they are completely missing the point. Completely missing the point. And the point is that when it comes down to all of this stuff, if you hire the right guy, or better yet, if you're not afraid to be bold, and when you know that things aren't going well, and when you know that, for instance, you are in a situation of where you need a change, you got to be willing to go make the change. And the idea that you can't pull it off, you know, if you do it and you fire a good coach who won a Super Bowl, you might be doomed to the dark ages for 30 years. Well, that's just not the case here at all, actually. There's countless examples of teams that have figured out how to get it done after firing a coach that was doing a good job, but just they felt like it was time to go in a different direction. If you have a good organization, if you know how to hire coaches, if you know how to do things the right way as an organization, guess what? You can make bold moves to try and win. And you know what? All you got to do, if you're confused, is look across the river. The Penguins had, what's his name, Michelle Therrien, who was a really good coach, who had taken them to the brink of winning a Stanley Cup the year before. And what happened? Halfway through the season, they fired him. They hired a guy by the name of Dan Bylsma that most people had never even heard of, actually. Kind of came out of nowhere in many ways, right? Next thing you know, they win the Stanley Cup. Next 3 or 4 years or whatever it was, they're in the playoffs every year. They win, you know, in the they win a round or two in the playoffs, you know, for the next couple of years. In fact, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the year before Bylsma got fired, they might have lost in the conference finals. I'll look that up but bottom line is he actually had some success in the playoffs. And you know what? They fired him. They hired some guy by the name of Mike Johnston, and everyone said, who the hell is this guy? And guess what? It was really clear really quickly that it was a total mistake. And you know what they did? They fired him in the midst of a disastrous start, and they hired somebody by the name of Mike Sullivan, who people actually at least had heard of him. But at the end of the day, I don't know that if you look at his resume prior to when he was with the Penguins, anybody thought he was a spectacular coach. And what did he do? He won 2 Stanley Cups back-to-back. And guess what? We might be to the point where the Penguins need to move on from Mike Sullivan. It might be to the point where his system isn't working, his message isn't resonating, he's trying to play a style of hockey that he doesn't have the team to play with, his loyalty to certain players is probably clouding his judgment. Maybe it's time to move on from him. And nobody bats an eye when you talk like that about the Penguins. Nobody thinks twice about it when you talk about that when it comes to the Penguins. I mean, I don't understand why there's this group that wants to act like Mike Tomlin has to be protected at all costs and that we can't have legitimate conversations about whether or not it might be time to move in a different direction. And I can tell you, as honest as I can be, I'm not sold one way or the other. I'm open to both arguments. You've got a really good coach who's had a lot of success. You stay there with him. You keep building the team. Eventually, he's going to find his fastball again, and, you're going to win. The other thing is, well, you know what? When you look at it, you probably need to go a different direction because he's never going to be better than he is or that he was those first 4 or 5 years. His message is stale. Whatever. But at the end of the day, I look at the Eagles, and I ask every Steelers fan on the planet, would you rather have 6 seasons in a row where you did not win a playoff game, but you did not have a losing season? Or would you rather have a season, 6 seasons where you won 2 Super Bowls, but you had to endure a 4-11 in there? What would you rather have, Joel?
Got to have those Super Bowls in there, you know?
Of course. If I told you over the next 6 years, for instance, that, you're a big Penn State fan. If I told you over the next 6 years that Penn State would be would win a national championship and 2 Big Ten titles, get to the playoffs 3 times and, win one of the national championships, but in two of the other three years, they would go to the Pinstripe Bowl, and 1 year they'd go 5-7. You would take that, wouldn't you?
We've got championships in there. Those last forever.
Exactly. So while we're sitting here touting the fact that, never had a losing season, 8-8 doesn't do a thing for me. 9-7, 9-8 doesn't do a thing for me. What have you done in the playoffs? That's what matters. And it's not about winning the Super Bowl either. It's about advancing and winning in the playoffs. Like I just said, the Bengals, the last 2 years, they're 5-1 in the or 5-2 in the playoffs. So whatever you think about them, you know what? It is what it is. Whatever you think about them, they win in the playoffs. That's only one team can win the Super Bowl. I get that. It's a very unfair standard to say it's either Super Bowl or bust. But the other part of it is if you've win in the playoffs, guess what? I can endure a losing season or whatever. It doesn't matter to me.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Well, the ACC in what is the maybe worst case of scheduling idiocy that I've ever heard of or seen is having their big, you know, football schedule unveiling special right now, Joel. It's going on, right? Where they're unveiling the football schedule for next season. And they're doing it at a time on ACC Network where they are actually opposite a huge ACC basketball game that people that might be interested in the ACC would want to watch between Virginia and Syracuse, which is on ESPN. Joining me now, Noah Howes from the Post-Gazette. And Noah, have you been able to piece together the Pitt schedule yet, or are they still tinkering around with all of the big games?
Paul, I'm going to leave the ranting to you because that's your specialty, but this is easily my least favorite day of the year covering sports. I just hate how all of this unfolds. I have half of their schedule. The first four games have been revealed. Wofford and Cincinnati are the first two home games of the year, then at West Virginia. The next game is home against North Carolina. And then we also know that Pitt plays at Notre Dame on October 28th, and they will play Syracuse at Yankee Stadium on November 11th, Veterans Day. And they're breaking news. Pitt will play at Virginia Tech on September 30th. But, yeah, this is what I'm doing right now. I'm just sitting here watching the ACC. Rather than watching, like you said, a good basketball game on tonight or quite literally doing anything else, this is my life right now. But it is what it is.
Here's the thing. North Carolina, Mac Brown apparently thinks that North Carolina is being treated unfairly. Have you seen anything about their schedule that makes you think it's unfair to them?
I mean, I don't think it's unfair. I mean, that's what happens when you're a good football team. You're supposed to have a tough schedule. Look at Pitt. I mean, after Pitt opens against Wofford, it's got Cincinnati at West Virginia, home against North Carolina, and then on the road at Virginia Tech. Those are two very challenging road atmospheres right there with WVU and at Virginia Tech. And then you play Cincinnati, a team that was in the playoff 2 years ago. And then you play arguably the best quarterback in the country at home for your ACC opener. So, I mean, you know, Narduzzi hasn't issued any complaints yet. I don't understand why Mac Brown would either.
Well, he did. But again, I usually laugh at those kinds of things because you've got to play 12 games. You already know who the opponents are. It's just a matter of what order they're in. In football, unless it's a short week, which they usually don't do to you in college football. And if they do, you know, it's a combination that you can handle reasonably well. It's not like hockey or the NBA where you could have to play back-to-back games or, you know, be in one city one night and play in the next city in another night. I mean, I don't know. I think most of those complaints about football are silly.
Yeah, and like I said before, I mean, when you're playing a tough schedule, that gives you a better opportunity to get into the playoffs. You need to win big games. There are teams that have missed the playoff in recent years because they did not have a strong enough strength of schedule. And, you know, when you have Drake May as your quarterback, I think you should be confident in whoever you're playing. So, yeah. And I also think that it's probably better to play your tough games earlier in the year. And because if you lose, you don't get punished by the committee as much as if you lose later in the season. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll, you know, once it's all put out there, I'm sure you'll write a story and inform us as to what the order of all these games are and how it's going to play out. But until such time, Pitt basketball play, you know, big win on Saturday. They came from behind, you know, 11-0 run to finish them off. They dodged a three at the end of the Wake Forest game. And now they've got at North Carolina. I mean, this is a team that, you know, last few years, all of those games I just talked about, they definitely lose. But they're finding ways to win this year, and that's probably the biggest difference. They're good enough, but they're also finding ways to win, aren't they?
Yeah, and they're doing it in different fashion a lot of the different times. I mean, Wednesday's game against Wake Forest, they set the program record with 18 threes. They won by defense on Saturday, ending the game on an 11-0 run, shutting down Miami, who, as we saw for the first 38 minutes of that contest, has some incredible guards in their backcourt. And just different opponents bring out different things that the Panthers have to offer. If they need isolation scoring, they can get that from Jamarius Burton. If they need outside shooting, they can get it from Greg Elliott, or they can get it from Blake Hinton. If they've kind of been lacking down low, that's where they've been struggling this year. But even with that, Betty Federico, I think, has had his moments in certain games where he made a big difference. And I think Miami was one of them down the stretch. His defense and a couple of clutch buckets on that run really helped Pitt get back in the mix. So, yeah, it just goes to show for the depth that Capel's built here through the transfer portal. And that experience is really paying off, where you have so many different players who have already played in big basketball games, be it in the national tournament or conference tournaments or just whatever they experience at their other programs. They're prepared for these tense late-game situations that maybe players on former teams that Capel had here weren't prepared for.
You know, that's a question that is a really actually a legitimate question that people should ask. You know, this could be a one-hit wonder, couldn't it? He's going to have to go out and recruit guys that are similar for next year because he's losing a bunch of these guys because they're all out of eligibility.
Well, only three of them are out of eligibility. It's just Cummings, Greg Elliott, and Jamarius Burton. I mean, that's a big three. That's your entire starting backcourt. But I believe Sabonde has another year of eligibility. And you got to remember, Paul, I mean, this is a team that's playing without two of the players who were expected to be the two best players on the roster entering this year. Everyone, when you talked about Pitt basketball entering the season, it was, well, they got John Hughley and they just landed a huge recruit in Dior Johnson. Now, there's no guarantee that either of them will be around next year with the transfer portal and everything, but assuming both of them return, you add two four-star recruits as true freshmen coming into the mix. They're both guards. You have a decent roster, and, you know, you never know what Hinton wants to do. I would assume that Blake Hinton would be back. Betty Federico and the Twins, you get your whole front court returning. I honestly think Pitt could be better next year than it is this year.
Well, if they're going to lose Burton, and they're going to lose who are the other two that you said? Burton?
Greg Elliott and
Cummings.
They're replacing their starting backcourt.
And they're also going to lose Nike Sabonde. He has no way he can be eligible again. Can he?
I think so, because I believe he's a redshirt senior. He's not a graduate player. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe he still has another year of COVID eligibility, because the year he's playing with now is due to his injury redshirt that he received from last season where he tore his ACL.
Well, if that's the case, then that's silly, because they've got to get these extra years out of control. My thing with the whole thing, and this is just a tangent of – when I read stories about guys getting seventh, eighth, and ninth seasons, we've now lost our damn minds. That should never happen. But if Sabonde comes back, that's obviously a really big bonus. I thought for sure he was gone, just from eligibility wise. Is there any chance Blake Hinton goes to the NBA?
I don't think so. I don't see how he would draw significant enough NBA interest that he would want to leave. Maybe if he has like a great stretch for the rest of the year, he could be a second round pick, or even do what Champagne did, and that's just go to the league and sign as an undrafted free agent. But I think that Blake still has some things to tune up in his game before pro scouts really give him an honest evaluation, but I don't know.
Well,
I could be wrong. Or I mean, you never know, Paul. Like, any of these guys could leave in the transfer portal. Everyone seems very happy on this team. I will point that out. It seems like a very unified group. But in today's game, that doesn't mean anything. Anyone could go somewhere else where they feel they have a better opportunity.
Well, I would say this. You know, for the first time since Capel's been here, and really for if any of guys have eligibility left and – you know, plan on using it. If I can't think of a single reason why any of them would leave now that the program is finally winning, is finally where you want it to be. It seems like everyone's getting along well. It seems like, you know, things are great. I would hope everybody that has eligibility left is coming back to Pitt that, you know, provided Pitt wants them back.
Yeah. I mean, there might be a couple of guys who, you know, guys coming off the bench, like a Will Jeffress, who, you know, what's his role once he's healthy next season here? Will he have a spot? Maybe he would reconsider somewhere. Or even a Nate Santos, who, while he's been getting minutes, you look, I mean, two of the three freshmen coming in from the high school level are guards. So does he really want to compete for playing time against them, or could he go somewhere smaller and be a starter? Who knows? And that's just speculation. But like you said, Paul, I mean, this group seems to really, really get along. All they talk about is how unified they are, and that's a valid claim. Think of all the adversity they've been through. It started 1-3 this season. They lost, you know, their biggest recruit due to an off-the-court issue before the year even started. They lost their best player due to, you know, undisclosed off-the-court kind of struggles, and they still found a way. They're playing without three of their scholarship players. Out of their 13 available scholarship players, three of them aren't there. They've had guys getting minutes who weren't expected to be playing at all come ACC time, and they're still in a great position right now.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, really, I'm looking at the remaining schedule, right? 2, 4, 6, 8 more games, 9 more games. So they've got 9 more games to play. I mean, even if they go 5-4 and win one ACC game, they're going to make the tournament, aren't they? I don't know what the metrics say, but it would seem to me that if this team can go 13 wins in the ACC, 20 wins, 21 wins overall, and I'm not saying they're going to go 5-4. I think that's the floor for what they're going to go. I think they'll do better than that. But my point is, it almost seems like it's going to be hard for them to miss the tournament.
You would think, but what I'll say is this. The ACC is not getting nearly the amount of respect as what the conference used to. If you look at other teams in, you know, maybe the Big East or the Big Ten or the Big 12, there are teams like Ohio State and Creighton who are barely over 500, yet they have a significant better net rating. They have a significantly better KenPom rating. And those are just, you know, the number sites or whatever, but their RPI is better, and bracketologists seem to lean on them for some reason, despite, you know, Pitt having more quad one wins and Pitt having a better conference record and overall standings. I would say in order, and Chris Carter and I talked about this in our mailbag, which comes out tomorrow. I think in order to be an absolute lock before the ACC tournament starts, I think Pitt needs to finish this stretch 7-2, simply because there aren't a lot of quality opponents left on its schedule. And if it goes 5-4, like you just said, that probably includes some ugly losses. And we saw what one ugly loss against Florida State did to its public perception nationally just a couple of weekends ago. And it seems like Pitt has very little to gain from notable wins and has a lot to lose if it loses to bad teams. And that's because it started the season off poorly, and some people are just kind of waiting for it to fall back again.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a last one I have for you. I forgot to ask you about this before I let you go. What is the deal with the? I guess it's a pinstripe bull in October. What is the deal with this thing here? Pitt against the Yankee, or I'm sorry, November. Pitt against the Syracuse at Yankee Stadium. What is the point of that?
So it's the 100-year anniversary of the first college football game that was played at Yankee Stadium. Now, Paul, I don't want to have to do this, but I will point out that that Yankee Stadium no longer exists. this current Yankee Stadium was built, I believe, in like 2009 or 10. But nonetheless, it's the 100-year anniversary for the first ever college football game played at Yankee Stadium. I think it's a cool thing, and I actually think it's something that benefits Pitt, not playing in a dome the way, you know, Narduzzi's teams are aggressive defensively and the way Pitt's going to probably run the football this fall. That's something to their benefit and something to Syracuse's detriment. I think it's a cool thing. Also, I believe that's Veterans Day weekend, so they might have something involved with that as well. But yeah, just interesting.
If you're Syracuse,
matchup.
If you're Syracuse, are you agreeing to that, to give up a home game? Like, will they get a home game, you know, 2 years from now? Like, I'm sorry, next
Maybe.
Year. Will they get a home game next year to make up for this? Like, or will next year be back at Pitt Stadium, which would mean Syracuse will have to play Pitt 3 years in a row, either on the road or at a neutral site?
I'm interested to see that because, I mean, technically it's labeled as you would think Syracuse would be the home team, right? Because this is in New York, but not really close to their stadium either. So I don't have an answer for you on that one, Paul, but I mean, I will look into that because that's an interesting point you bring up.
Well, here's one other one for you. Why don't they just have Rutgers play Princeton?
Yeah.
At Yankee Stadium. Anyway.
Yeah.
Noah, great stuff as always. Thank you so much, sir. And we'll see you at the next Pitt home game.
All right. I'll see you then.
All right. That's Noah Hiles from PostGazette.com breaking it down. I think they've actually gotten to the sixth game now. It is Louisville at Pitt. At any rate, it's 93.7 The Fan. Boogie Wonderland, baby. Earth, Wind, and Fire, good for the soul. That's how we do it, right? Every single night that I'm here. Of course, I ain't here that many nights because I'm on during the day at KDK AM. Same story. A little different format, but same story. I talk about whatever the hell I want to talk about over there. Here I talk about whatever the hell I want to talk about, too. Here it's supposed to be loosely, loosely affiliated with sports. Over there, it's loosely affiliated with the world. And it's amazing how often they cross. You know, like, for instance, today, this morning over there, I was talking a little bit about the whole idea of black quarterbacks, you know, making it to the Super Bowl. And I said, the big thing about it is, it really is not that big of a deal. I mean, it's historic, I guess. But now there's so many black quarterbacks in the league, most people watching games now, you don't think like when I was growing up in the 80s, in the 90s, Warren Moon, you know, there wasn't that many. Randall Cunningham, and, you know, Doug Williams obviously won the Super Bowl. It was a big deal. But now, I mean, how many games do you watch where you say, wow, it's a black quarterback? You really don't. Because there's so many games that you watch where it is two black quarterbacks playing against each other. I mean, hell, the Eagles and the Cowboys rivalry is defined by, you know, two black quarterbacks. Right? Now you're going to have the Browns and the Ravens, two black quarterbacks. They're going to play twice a year. Nobody's going to say that. So it's different. It also shows the progress we've made. And here's the one thing I'm going to tell you. The one thing I'm going to tell you that's going to piss people off, some people, but it's the truth. You want to know why we made progress so far in that area? Even more so than coaching, you know, black coaches. I mean, I think there's still, you know, ways to go there. And, you know, all these other areas that... You notice the one thing about black quarterbacks we haven't done? There was never a Rooney rule for that. There was never a quota for that. There was never a diversity training and, you know, special hiring practices to try and make that. Do you want to know why? Because sports on the field is the last place where competition actually exists. It's a meritocracy. And if you are somebody who's making $5 or $6 million a year to coach, and you know that's your livelihood, you have to pick the best player, regardless of who it is, regardless of what color it is, regardless of whatever. Whatever race they are, whatever creed they are, whatever sexual orientation they are, it doesn't matter. You've got to put the 53 best players on the on your roster that you can put on every single year. And it's funny. With true 100% pure competition, we've made a hell of a lot more progress in that area than all of these other areas combined that we've had all of these special programs to try and enforce it or force it to happen. That might be something we want to learn from. Oh, I know I'm talking a different language. I get it. I understand it. But I'm just telling you that when you look at it from that perspective, black quarterbacks, you want to know why they're prevalent throughout the entire league this now? Because they proved time and time again, they're no different than white quarterbacks. You can win with them. They're good. And quite often, they're the best player on the team. And here's the other area where I would tell you, you can tell that they've made we've made a ton of progress in 25 years in that area. You want to know where, Joel? The fact that Josh Johnson, who's been on 14 different rosters, was the guy that was the backup for San Francisco. And what do you mean by that? What I mean by that is 30 years ago, you had to pretty much be the starter. And if you didn't do well your first year or two, you know what? When you were a black quarterback, you were out of the league. You were cut and you were out of the league. That's the way it went. It was very, 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 very rare to find those guys like, what was his name? Reggie Evans, I think his name was, or something like that, that played for the Raiders. Guys that, you know, it was rare. Now they're all over the place. Now you've got Josh Dobbs playing, you know, in a playoff game for the Titans, right? And he's been on how many rosters bouncing around? It's not just about the stars anymore. It's not just about, well, we've got to be better than they than everybody else. You know, that started to change 10, 15 years ago. It really did. So actually, when the Eagles won, you know, the first game, and then the Chiefs won, I actually never even processed, wow, it's unbelievable. Two black quarterbacks are going to play each other because we see it every week. It's really not that special. And it's not that special because of the progress we've made. And it's progress that was earned. Meritocracy, competition. We didn't need all these programs to, you know, well, we've got to make sure we have programs for people of color and people of this and check the box in this category and check the box in this category and diversity programs and diversity training programs and all the other stuff. Because sports, it's about competition and meritocracy. And there's not a coach in America that is going to put somebody on the field that's inferior because they have to win games. Period. They have to win games. So it's neat that, you know, you've got finally, you know, you've got one of these matchups finally took place in the Super Bowl, but I don't think it's really all that big of a deal. You know, a few years ago when Tony Dungy and Lovie Smith met each other, yeah, that was significant. And that was significant for a number of reasons. And even now, like I said, there's still a ways to go, but it's interesting. We've done everything in our power to try and, you know, artificially change the plight of black head coaches and plight of black coaches, and it's gotten a little bit better. You see more and more coordinators that are black coaches or whatever, but at the end of the day, it's still, what is there, four or five total, I think, in the entire league, if that many? And, of course, that's counting McDaniel and that's counting Rivera. You know, when you talk about minority coaches, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's but my point is we've spent all of this time and energy and everything else trying to even the score. But you look at the quarterback position, we haven't had to do that because it's a meritocracy. The best players play. And the teams that know that, the teams that win. You know, this isn't, you know, Warren Moon coming out of Washington and having to go to, you know, playing the Grey Cup for the Canadian Football League for 6 years or 7 years or whatever it was before he finally gets a shot on the worst team in the NFL. No, we're not there. We're not even close to there. Now you turn on a game any Sunday, it's entirely possible you're going to see two black quarterbacks playing against each other. And we don't even think about it anymore. We don't even ever really think about that anymore or talk about it.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.